How about a word today with our teachers? How is it that so many supposedly educated adults still believe that Benjamin Franklin discovered electricity with his kite when it was struck by lightning, and that Columbus discovered America while trying to prove that the world was round? It can't be because we're all ignorant or gullible or both. Better to blame those who taught us these myths of history. If you know for a fact that Napoleon was the shortest emperor ever, and that Einstein absolutely failed math as a kid, then I've got some disappointing news for you. The real truth is that few of us have our facts straight when it comes to history. Keep listening for the truth. Part of the allure of Vincent van Gogh's priceless Impressionist paintings is the widely accepted belief that this 19th century artist was stark raving mad. Exhibit A. In a fit of madness, he lopped off his left ear with a razor blade and gifted the bloody organ to a French prostitute. Need proof? How about the famous Van Gogh self-portrait with a bandaged ear? Interesting. But in 2009, a pair of German art historians busted the madman myth in a book titled Pack of Silence, which claims that Van Gogh's close friend and rival, Paul Gauguin, clicked off Van Gogh's earlobe with a fencing rapier. The book asserts that Gauguin and Van Gogh had a violent falling out in 1888, resulting in the ear-chopping incident. Both men vowed to keep the matter quiet. Although Gauguin invented the prostitute story to make Van Gogh look even crazier, Van Gogh undeniably suffered from periodic fits and ultimately took his own life in a deep bout of depression. But was he certifiably mad? An American microbiologist diagnosed Van Gogh a century after his death with acute intermittent porphyria, which is a metabolic disorder, not a neurological disease. So much for what we were taught. Most of us know nothing about the French general and emperor for life, Napoleon Bonaparte, a man whose military skill and political ambition made him one of the most powerful and feared figures of the late 18th and early 19th centuries, other than the fact that we were taught he was extremely short. Even today we see that an overcompensating short guy has a Napoleon complex. For years, the history books listed Napoleon's official height at 5 feet 2 inches, or 1.7 meters, indisputably in shorty territory. But that's because they mistakenly believed that a French foot was the same as an English foot. When the measurements are properly converted, Napoleon stretches to a respectable 5 foot 7 inches. Now, that won't get him an NBA contract, but it's 2 inches taller than former French President Nicolas Sarkozy, and nearly a head above Russian Prime Minister Dmitry Medvedev. His shortness was a myth. With most historical falsehoods, it's hard to pinpoint who actually started the whole misinterpreted mess. But this next one has a clear culprit. Thousands of stagings of the ring cycle made the de facto Viking helmet foremost in our minds. So what did the real Viking helmets look like? We're not quite sure. Viking remains have been dug up across Scandinavia, but archaeologists have only found one helmet, a rounded iron cap with a nose guard, but nary a horn in sight. It really doesn't seem too practical to have a helmet with horns, since they could get tangled up in tree branches. The inspiration may have come from pre-Viking cultures in northern Europe, that used helmets with horns or antlers in religious ceremonies. The next time you see horned people on a bus singing for J.G. Wentworth, rest assured they are not Vikings. This one is a classic inspiration story for every kid who ever got a C- on the third grade multiplication test. We heard that a famous man also struggled with numbers, Albert Einstein. Wrong. Yes, Albert Einstein was a late bloomer. He was slow to talk and socially awkward. And he did not get the best grades in school. He even flunked the entrance exam to Zurich Polytechnical Institute. But that's not because he couldn't do math. He passed the math section, but failed the botany, zoology, and language requirements. By all accounts, little Albert was an ingenious problem solver who was simply bored to death by most subjects other than math. The source of the Einstein flunked math myth is not clear. However, when shown the allegation in a 1935 Ripley's Believe It or Not column, Einstein replied, "I never failed in mathematics. Before I was 15, I had mastered differential and integral calculus." It was some dim bulb that spread the word that Einstein was a poor math student. Sir Isaac Newton is arguably the most influential and insanely original mathematician and physicist of all time. Somewhere he and Einstein are arm wrestling for the title. It turns out the inventor of calculus and the fundamental laws of motion was also an inventive storyteller. In 1666, the University of Cambridge was shut down due to a little thing called the plague. So Newton took a break from his studies and returned to his childhood home in Lincolnshire. Newton's first biographer, William Stuckelly, related that in 1726, when the two of them were having a spot of tea under the shade of an apple tree, Newton reminisced that it was in a similar place 60 years earlier that the notion of gravity had come into his mind. Why should that apple always descend perpendicularly to the ground, thought he to himself, occasioned by the fall of an apple as he sat there in a contemplative mood? Why should it not go sideways or upwards, but constantly to the earth's center? Assuredly, the reason is that the earth draws it there. There must be a drawing power in matter. That's a bushel load of mind-blowing insight from one apple. But that's the story that Newton told and retold over the course of his life to friends and colleagues. And as with most good stories and good storytellers, the tale grew more colorful with each retelling. But never did it say anything about an apple literally plunking Newton on the head. For all we know, it could have been a fig. Come on, this last one has to be true. Even if it's not, can't we all just agree to continue saying that Thomas Crapper invented the flush toilet? This little pseudo-fact has been making fourth graders giddy for centuries. Yes, Thomas Crapper was a 19th century plumber and manufacturer whose brand of water closets gained widespread popularity in his native England. But no, Mr. Crapper did not invent the life-altering item that often bore his name. Flush toilets were already installed in finer households by the time young Crapper started his plumber apprenticeship as a child in the 1840s. And sadly for irony lovers, the word crappe is a 13th century word for waste. So it was likely in use for toilet-related matters before Mr. Crapper even got into the business. The true inventor of the flush toilet was likely Sir John Harrington, a 16th century English poet, translator, rogue, and occasional inventor, who installed one of his ingenious loos for Queen Elizabeth at her country palace in Surrey. If you ever wondered why toilets are called John's, wonder no more. And finally, today we look at the truth about the violent Wild West. 100 years of Westerns have taught us how people lived and died in the Old West. The quicker draw lived to gunfight another day. It was essentially a roving, single elimination, rock, paper, scissors tournament that did not end until you were dead. But in reality, how many murders do you suppose these old Western towns saw in a year? Take a guess. Let's say the bloodiest, gunslingingest of the famous cattle towns, with the cowboys doing quick draws at high noon every other day. 100? More? How about 5? 5! That was the most murders any Old West town saw in any 1 year, ever. Most Western towns averaged 1.5 murders in any 1 year, and not all of those were from shootings. You were way more likely to be murdered in Baltimore in 2020 than you were in Tombstone in 1881, the year of the famous gunfight at the OK Corral, where a body count of 3 happened. And that town's most violent year ever. 3 people died. The gore and violence was created on backlots in Hollywood, and the myths surrounding the violent Old West have lived among us for decades. But they are not true. Our schools don't teach much history anymore, but they should, to keep gullible students from believing the myths taught to us about our history. There is always another side to every so-called fact, and I'll continue to dispel the myths in future commentaries. Thank you for listening. I'll be back next week, God willing, and God bless America.